copyright forum of Christian leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
I was sent something yesterday. You will see it up on the screen. It's about teenage diaries and the lack of proportions. There's nothing like teenage diaries for putting momentous historical events in perspective. And here is what Dina Hall wrote in her diary, July 20, 1969. I went to arts center by myself in yellow cords and blouse. Ian was there, but he didn't speak to me. Got rhyme in my handbag from someone who's apparently got a crush on me. It's Nicholas, I think. Ugh. Man landed on moon. Now it's not only teenagers that is out of sync with reality. We are so often unbalanced. We are so self-centered. We are bent inwards towards ourselves. So we don't see God and the world he has created in other people. We're just gazing at ourselves, our happiness or our misery. And this is one thing that will be very clear this morning, the self-centered tendency within us. Yesterday, we listened to the dialogue between Jesus and Nathanael and saw how Jesus referred to the dream of Jacob. And we concluded by saying, what was a dream with Jacob that heaven is open has become a reality in the Son of Man. Today, we will travel back in history to read about Jacob and how God crossed his path and what heaven meant in his life. So the theme for today, we will continue to study encounters with the living God, and it's about Jacob wrestling with God in the night. And if you have your Bible with you, please turn to Genesis 32. Genesis 32, verse 22 to 31. That night, Jacob got up and took his two wives, his two maidservants, and his 11 sons, and crossed the ford of the Jabbok. After he had sent them across the stream, he sent over all his possessions. So Jacob was left alone. And a man wrestled with him till daybreak. When the man saw that he could not overpower him, he touched the socket of Jacob's hip so that his hip was wrenched as he wrestled with the man. Then the man said, "Let me go, for it's daybreak." But Jacob replied, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." The man asked, "What is your name?" "Jacob," he answered. Then the man said, "Your name will no longer be Jacob, but Israel, because you have struggled with God and with men and have overcome." Jacob said, "Please, tell me your name." But he replied, "Why do you ask my name?" Then he blessed him there. So Jacob called the place Peniel, saying, "It is because I saw God face to face, and yet my life was spared." The sun rose above him as he passed Peniel, and he was limping because of his hip. Therefore, to this day, the Israelites do not eat the tendon attached to the socket of the hip, because the socket of Jacob's hip was touched near the tendon. This is the word of the Lord. This text has fascinated writers and artists for centuries. A lonely man fights for his life in the dark for a whole night until the sun comes out. What is it about? Why is Jacob attacked? Who is the attacker? How can Jacob be said to have overcome? It seems the attacker had the upper hand and had injured Jacob. And where does God come into the picture? Is it really God wrestling with Jacob? How can a man wrestle with God and survive? Back in the 80s, I read a book by John White about Jacob, and I'm sure there will be a number of echoes from White in what I'm saying here, because that book made a strong impression on me. Unfortunately, I've lost the book, but I've continued to be very fascinated by the story of Jacob. Yesterday night, we had a door on the stage. Now, I would like you today to imagine not a door, but a mirror, a huge mirror, so you could see yourself if you're looking there. Because I think this story is here to mirror our lives. I have prayed for this morning that you, while listening, will be able to see your story through this text. So, let's move into the night and the struggle. It's night in the life of Jacob. It's night. It was dark, not only physically, but this night is a picture of Jacob's whole life. Earlier this day, he has taken his family and his servants to the other side of the stream, and now he is alone. He's alone with himself. And suddenly, unexpectedly, he is attacked. In order to understand this battle, we need to back off from this text to see where is Jacob coming from. Because this is a night where his whole life, his whole history is coming together in one moment. And on this night depends his whole future. And you cannot understand what's going on during the hours of wrestling if you don't see the whole story of Jacob. So let's look into Jacob's life. He had a very interesting background. He was born into a blessed family. He was the descendant of Abraham, who God had called out from Ur, and to whom God had given the most wonderful promise of blessing. A blessing that ultimately will have global consequences, that the whole earth and all the nations will be blessed. And that blessing will come through Abraham's family, including Jacob. So his family was very special, and Jacob knew it. He was born with a personal blessing, not only born into a blessed family, he was giving a personal blessing. He was a twin. He had an older brother, Esau. But God has said, even before they were born, one people will be stronger than the other, and the older will serve the younger. So it will not follow the culturally natural pattern that the firstborn would have the greatest blessing. No, the greatest blessing was to be put on Jacob, the second one. So, he had a very rich family background, and he knew it. A very fortunate starting point. But it was also a very dysfunctional family, where the relationship between his father, Isaac, and his mother, Rebekah, had broken down. And where the relationship between the two brothers was horrible. This is very painful to read. The relationship between Isaac and Rebekah had not always been that bad. Once his parents had been in love. And let me make a confession here. When I was young and romantic, the love story between Isaac and Rebekah, Jacob's parents, was one of my favorites. I've read it many, many times. You can read it in Genesis 24, and it still touches my heart when I think of it. You know, the story is this. Sarah, Jacob's grandmother, had died, and Abraham, Jacob's grandfather, he was an old man, knowing he was soon to die. Isaac was his only son that he cared for, and he wanted to get a wife for his son before he dies. So he sends his most trusted servant, presumably an old man, to bring back a wife to Isaac. And think of Isaac's situation. He's mourning his mother. He realizes he will soon lose his father, so he will be totally on his own. And now this old servant is gone away to get him a wife. Now that's a very worrying situation. What will come of this? We can understand why Isaac was walking out in the field, meditating, pondering, reflecting over his life. What will his future be? And what about this wife the servant will bring? And then the servant comes with Rebekah, and Jacob's Isaac see her in a distance and wonder, how will this be? Now we as readers of the text, we have an advantage. We already know that Rebekah is very beautiful. And we already know she has a very beautiful character. You know, she has been given water to all the animals of the servant. So we know it's a wonderful person coming. And Isaac falls deeply in love with Rebekah. Isaac brought her into the tent of his mother Sarah, and he married Rebekah. So she becomes his wife, and he loved her. And Isaac was comforted after his mother's death. So he loved her. Now all that has gone. When we come in the story of Jacob, how sad is that? It started out as a love story, and then it ends as a dysfunctional family. Isaac and Rebekah lost their intimacy, their friendship, and their love. Maybe this is a wake-up call for some of us. What's happening with our love stories? What is happening with our love stories? In this case, Isaac and Rebekah does not seem to be in love with each other any longer. And they were not loving the two boys in a good way. Instead, they were putting the boys up against each other. And Rebekah was willing to trick her dying husband. So they are really estranged from each other. And they estrange their children from each other. Don't tell anyone, but I do really like The Simpsons. And you know, there is an episode in The Simpsons where Homer Simpson is reading the Bible. And he comes to the end of the Bible and says, all these people are a mess, except this one guy. And that is so true. The people that God works with in the Bible, it's such a mess. It's a lot of dysfunctional people and families. And so it was with Isaac and Rebekah and the family where Jacob grew up. God comes to people with messy lives. He crosses the paths of messy people. And Jacob's family is surely an example. Now, we are not only victims of our backgrounds, we also make choices ourselves. And Jacob made a number of decisive and very destructive choices in his life. Firstly, he cheated his brother Esau of the right of the firstborn. You know, the two brothers were very different. Esau was physical, strong, a macho guy. He liked the wilderness. He liked to go hunting. He was so different from Jacob. One time, coming back from a hunt, totally exhausted, really hungry, Jacob tempted his brother to sell his right as the firstborn. And he tempted him with a stew, with a pot of soup. You know, he knew his brother's weak point, his sensuality. And Esau falls for the temptation. Secondly, and of course, there will be problems in the relationship between Esau and Jacob from that point on. But it will get worse. Secondly, Jacob lied to his father Isaac to receive the blessing. When Isaac realized that he is dying, he asked Esau to prepare a special meal, and then he will give his oldest son the special blessing. But now the mother, Rebekah, comes into the picture, and she talks Jacob into a conspiracy. So when Esau is out hunting, Rebekah and Jacob prepares a meal. They dress up Jacob as Esau, the hairy Esau, and Jacob lies to his blind and dying father. I'm almost crying when I read the text. Can you imagine the situation? Isaac is blind. He's an old man. He's dying. And then as a son, you approach your father. Think of how Jacob must have hardened his heart to come to his father and say, "I am Esau." I am your firstborn. Isaac is very suspicious. He does not recognize the voice. And he's surprised. How could you have prepared a meal already? So Isaac asks his son, "How did you find it so quickly, my son, the animal?" And Jacob involves God in his lie. He says, "The Lord, your God, gave me success." How he must harden his heart. And Isaac is not convinced yet. "Come closer, my son." And he wants to feel the hair on the arms of Jacob. And Isaac said, "The voice is the voice of Jacob, but the hands are the hands of Esau." And Isaac blesses Jacob. But still, he is not really convinced. So he says, a third time, he says, "Come here, my son, and kiss me." So Jacob went to him and kissed him. When Isaac caught the smell of Esau's clothing, he blessed him. This is really heartbreaking. He was lying, involving God in his lie to his father, to his dying father. And now there is distrust in all relationships in the family. The whole family, the family of the promise, is really falling apart. Later on, Jacob will trick his uncle Laban of his cattle, trying to use a lot of magical schemes. And the result of all this is a disaster for Jacob. He must run away. And from this point on, his life will be a life of uncertainty, a life on the run. He will be escaping. So he flees from his brother who wants to kill him because Jacob has bereft him of his birthright and of the special blessing. And later he needs to flee from his uncle. He's on the run. How are we to understand this? Is he only on the run from human beings? I think he's running away from his family and then later running away from Laban is an illustration of a deeper escape. The problem for Jacob is that he is running away from God. He's running away from God. The pattern in Jacob's life seems to be that he's trying all the way to take for himself what God has promised to give him. He takes for himself what God has promised to give him. He does not trust God. He wants to secure the blessing without God. And as a result, he's miserable along the way. He's not enjoying peace with God, nor enjoying peace with other people, because he does not trust God's promise. There's an interesting hint of this. When Jacob is escaping from the wrath of his brother, and he has the dream in Bethel that we referred to yesterday. In the dream, God gives the escaping Jacob wonderful promises. If you turn to Genesis 28, verse 13 to 15, can read the promises and see Jacob's response, because that's very interesting. God comes to Jacob in a dream and says, "I am the Lord, the God of your father Abraham and the God of Isaac. I will give you and your descendants the land on which you are lying. Your descendants will be like the dust of the earth, and you will spread out to the west and to the east and to the north and to the south. All peoples on earth will be blessed through you and your offspring. I am with you, and I will watch over you wherever you go, and I will bring you back to this land. I will not leave you until I have done what I've promised you." Wow, what a mercy from God. Jacob has just been lying to his father, involving God in the lie. But God has not given up on Jacob. He comes to him and gives him these four wonderful promises. You will have the land. You will be a great people. Through you, there will be blessing to all other peoples on earth. And I will personally protect you and secure that you will be able to come back to your family. That is a compassionate God. Now, what is Jacob's response to this? It would be natural to imagine that Jacob would give praise to God and put his trust in God. But no, no. Look in verse 20 to 22. When Jacob awoke and thinks of the dream, he says this. He made a vow saying, "If God will be with me, and if he will watch over me on this journey I'm taking, and if he will give me food to eat and clothes to wear so that I return safely to my father's house, then the Lord will be my God." He does not commit to God, not at all. He's postponing the whole process, saying, if this happened and this happened and this happened, then, later on, God will be my God, but not now. I'm on my own. It's a very clear signal that Jacob is not receiving the blessing from God. He continues to run away. So I think we can say that Jacob is on the run from God. The God who wants to do good for him. You think he's happy? I don't. He wants what God has promised to give him, but he does not seem to want God in his life. And every time he grabs for the blessing himself, he becomes increasingly miserable. And his life becomes increasingly complicated. And he lived a very complicated life. From Bethel, he moves on to his uncle Laban, trying to find protection from his angry brother there. When he is with his uncle Laban, there is three mirrors for him to look into. And I think I have the idea from an author called Paul Borgman. Living with Laban, there is like three mirrors put in front of Jacob. Now, let me be very clear here. It's not the causal link. We do not believe in karma. Those mirrors are not there as a result of Jacob's deed. No, no. He's just confronted with other people acting similar to himself. And if he would open his eyes, he could see his own misdeeds in them and how destructive they are. You know, as some have said, don't ever try to out-con a con. And that is the problem for both Jacob and Laban. They're two cons trying to out-con each other. And they make life really hard for each other. So there were mirrors for Jacob to reflect over his own life. Firstly, Jacob cheated his father. Now Laban cheats Jacob and have him to marry his daughter Leah, whom Jacob does not love. And he have him to work 7 more years for Rachel. The younger brother, Jacob, cheated the older of the birthright. Now here, the older sister cheated the younger of the marriage right. Jacob caused division between himself and his brother. Now he has to live with division in his own family because his two wives cannot get along with each other. His life is a mess, and it will actually get worse. When we came into the story in chapter 32, Jacob is haunted from all sides of his existence. Laban and Laban's sons, they think that Jacob has taken their wealth from them. So Jacob has to flee from his uncle and his sons. But his uncle is coming after him. And then Jacob is being told that Esau is coming for him with 400 soldiers to finally take the revenge. And Jacob is stuck at Jabbok. This is the decisive moment of his life. So he takes all his possession. He takes his family, he takes all his possession, he takes his servant over to the other side of the water, of the stream. And he remains alone in the darkness on his side. This is the night when his whole life and his own life is hunting him down. Laban has confronted him. Esau will confront him. And now a stranger attacks him in the night. And he has to fight for his life. He has to fight for his life. Who is he now? Who is Jacob? Has he changed since Bethel? When he had a dream and said, if, then God? All these years on the run. Has it made something with his heart? Where is he himself in relationship to God? Has he learned anything during his life? When you read the story, you can see that there has taken place changes in Jacob's life. Just earlier in chapter 32, when Jacob is in Mahanaim, he sees angels and prays to God. And that's very interesting. In Bethel, he saw angels and God talked to him. And Jacob was very detached. Here in Mahanaim, he sees angels and then we can hear his prayer. Listen to his prayer. O God of my father Abraham, my father Isaac, O Lord, I am unworthy of all the kindness and faithfulness you have shown your servant. Save me, I pray. This is the first time we see Jacob positively relate to God. He realizes God's kindness, and he prayed that God will save him. So far, we have heard anything of this sort before. This is the first prayer of Jacob. But how deep is the change? Is he seriously? Is he finally serious in relating himself to God? The coming night will give us the answer. So now, finally, the actual text that I read. Jacob is wrestling in the night. A man attacks Jacob. But the attacker cannot, despite the many hours of wrestling, defeat Jacob. And he finally injures him instead, hitting him at the hip. And Jacob can feel the pain in his whole body. And he can no longer stand on his feet. So he must cling to the attacker. Now he cannot afford to lose the grip on the attacker. He must hang on to the man who has attacked him in the night. And gradually, clinging on to this man, Jacob realizes whom he has been wrestling with during this night. And maybe this is a picture of how he has been wrestling with God throughout his whole life. He realizes who the attacker is. This is the God of his fathers. Clinging on to the attacker, Jacob hears a very surprising word. The attacker says to him, "Let me go, for it is daybreak." But through the pain in his own body, Jacob replied, "I will not go unless you bless me." These are the words that God has been waiting for 30 years. Finally, Jacob is ready to receive from God that which God has tried to give him his whole life. But Jacob has always tried to grab it for himself. Finally, he is in a place where he asks God to bless him. What a radical change of roles. "Let me go," says God, the God who had never given up on Jacob. "I will not let you go," says Jacob, who his whole life has run away from God. And now the sun rises over Jacob. Finally, Jacob acknowledges his true identity. You know, the question that has haunted Jacob his whole life is the question of his identity. You remember where it all went wrong? Isaac asked, "Who are you?" And Jacob said, "I am Esau." And now the question comes back. The attacker asks Jacob, "What is your name?" And Jacob answered, "I am Jacob." Finally, acknowledging the truth of who he is. By acknowledging that he is Jacob, which means deceiver, he becomes Israel. "Because you have struggled with God and with men and have overcome." Finally, Jacob is true to himself and to the promise in his family. Then Jacob asks about the identity of the attacker. What is your name? Surprisingly, the attacker will not answer. Why do you ask for my name? Why will he not answer? Well, because he, unlike Jacob, has never lied about his identity or hidden his name. And actually, Jacob already knew his identity, because Jacob goes on to say, I saw God face to face. The attacker is the God of Abraham and Isaac. And Jacob marveled at the grace of God. I saw God face to face, and yet my life was spared. And God blessed him there. Finally, there is peace in Jacob's life. The blessing that God had wanted to give him all along, now Jacob was ready to receive it. And the sun rose, and Jacob was limping. He was never more the same. He was marked for his life. But he was finally at peace with God, at peace with himself, and he had stepped into the promise that God had gave, that God had given to him. I hope you have looked into the mirror and reflected over your own life. Where are you in relationship to the promises God has given to you in Jesus Christ? How much have you tried to grab yourself instead of receiving the blessing from Him, letting Him give it to you by trusting Him instead? Let's just be silent and reflect over our own lives. Where are we in relationship to God and His promises over our lives?